I'd like to ask for your attention. There are various elements to formal meditation practice. I'd like to start with making a distinction between an attitude of meditation. This attitude is carrying throughout your day, irrespective of posture or position. So, an attitude of meditation is something that is more encompassing, it is more comprehensive than a technique or a method. If I speak of formal meditation practice, obviously I'm referring to a situation in which you can sit, you can walk, you can stand, you can lie down. So it is something that is at that moment of time your major preoccupation. It's not something you do by the side or by the way. So formal meditation practice, generally there's a set of different instructions, so that's what we're doing now. This is a formal meditation situation. Any such situation benefits tremendously from your clarity, both your clarity in scope of your exercise, what you actually want to do, and your clarity of intention. Yeah? So that means if you want to do that at home, it's necessary that you determine a period of time. You determine half an hour, three quarters of an hour, whatever amount of time is available, and that's what you do. Yeah? So you intend, you determine, and then you follow through. It's also important to have a clarity of what are the tools of your exercise, what are the tools of your practice. First of all, it is crucial that you instill a capacity to attend, to be aware of, and to be continually aware of physical sensations. Please bear with me for a moment if I insist that you distinguish sensation from emotion, from conception, from thought, from memory. Yeah. So these five things are totally different. Yeah. Now, our awareness is trained to follow thought. That is how our education systems work. You get good grades in school by associating, by jumping from one thought to the next, by connecting thought. That's what we're good at. That's a very tremendously useful skill to be able to do that, to connect thought, to correlate thought, to make inference, to compare, to check, to be logical about something. But that is one aspect of experience. Experience has many aspects. It is crucial for us that we don't mix them up. They are mixed up in our experience anyway, so we don't need to be concerned. We always get the whole package. But we need to be able to discern whether we are currently putting our awareness onto a thought or whether we're putting it onto a sensation. Our bodies, although we are quite identified with those bodies, we have good feelings if they feel good, and we have bad feelings if they feel bad, we have good feelings if they look pretty or young or healthy, and we have maybe other feelings if they start showing wrinkles, gray hair, and other signs of decrepitude. Our bodies are a lot of the time boring for most of us. You know, bodies are fascinating if they experience joy or pleasure or lust. if they are very painful, also we give them our attention. But in between the pleasure bit and the pain bit, there's a huge part which we generally find not very interesting. So we find it a lot more interesting to put our attention onto things of the mind, things we think, hear, we listen to, we imagine, we remember, we fantasize, we plan, we infer, such things. So in our meditation practice, we try to shift, we make a dramatic shift of our attention and to the first foundation of mindfulness, which is body, anything to do with body. Sensation, feeling, tone in the body, warmth, primary sensations, warmth, pressure, weight, density, things like that. The first aspect of Satipatthana meditation, of the foundations of mindfulness, is all things related to body. Kaya Nupassana is comprised of six different branches. The first one is posture and orientation of the body in space. So actually attending to how the body is, how it is to be with me sitting here. For most of us, this is intellectually slightly insulting. We are trained better. We can think about more profound things than how it is to be here sitting and breathing. Akinjana, the breather, isn't really a fantastic identity. Yeah? It's more Akinjana, the brilliant meditation teacher, is a much better identity. But sitting here, being a breathing body, and being able to be at ease with me breathing as a body, is a primary task. So that's what we like to do. We want to get the mind, or more precisely, the ability of the mind to be with experience, to bring that back into the body. The reason for that is very simple. All big meditation traditions have understood this. The content of the mind can refer to the past, can refer to the future. It can be absolutely accurate, it can be highly unreal. Yeah? So the content of my mental experience can be way, way away from the present moment. It can be somewhere 30 years ago and give me feelings. Yeah? I have sadness or anger, or I may find pleasure or regret. Yeah? So the emotional consequences of my experience are now. Even though the content, the mental content of my thinking may be something that has long time passed, or it may be something that never is going to happen, that is just a pure fantasy. Nevertheless, the emotional, and with the emotional, the somatic, the physical effect is now. So mental phenomena are tricky business as meditation's objects. Contrary to that, physical experience is always now. Yeah? I'm not having yesterday's toothache. I'm having the toothache I'm having right now. The toothache I can have experience of is a toothache that is perfectly immediate. Yeah? The edge of that toothache is at the very present moment. It's occurring now. The same happens with the feeling of breath. If you feel breath, it's not yesterday's breath or tomorrow's breath. It's the breath of now. So simply by putting our attention to physical processes, pressure, contact, warm, heat, breath, sensation, and so forth, simply by doing that, our mind is automatically in the present moment. Now the present moment, in many ways, is the precious moment. Why is it precious? It is precious because at this moment, we can be happy. We can't be happy yesterday, and the truth is we can't be happy tomorrow either. If you can't be happy now, you won't be happy tomorrow either. It's as simple as that. The present moment is also the moment where we can be free.
Thank you.
Okay, any better?
Good, I see many nods. Thank you. The present.
The present moment is also the moment where we can be free. Yeah? This is the moment where we actually can experience freedom. There is no freedom of yesterday, there is no freedom of tomorrow.
Well, freedom is also something
that depends on this moment. There's a third good reason, and that third good reason is that the present moment is the only moment we can do something. We can truly and genuinely act. There is no other moment when we can act other than now. We can't act yesterday. Yeah, we can rewrite the history, that's possible. We can reinterpret the chronicles. But you can't actually do something. You can't change something. So the present moment is the moment where we have power. Yeah, where we have genuine power to change, either as an inner attitude or to change something we do. So imagine how much time of your day is spent thinking about things of the past or thinking about things of the future, and how much of time we miss the present moment. Imagine these to be huge gates. There's a huge door leading to the past, and there's a huge door leading to the future. Yeah? If you're young, the door to the future is a lot more attractive. Yeah? You keep going to this door. If you're getting older, then you seem to be more and more preoccupied with the past. Yeah? So. Now, in between those huge doors, there's a little rickety sort of cubby hole. Yeah? It's tiny. It's not very attractive. It's wooden, and the hinges are slightly funny. Yeah, it's also creaky. Yeah. And it's this door which we're interested in. It's this door through which we go. And if we open that door, what we find is a temple. Imagine, a temple. I would like to call it, with the words of a friend of mine, the temple of suchness. Yeah, the temple of suchness. It's the place where we get in touch with the deepest, most reality of our experience. That is what meditation is supposed to help us with. It is that which we're trying to do. So the body is an instrument to help us with that. If we manage to stay with the experience of the body, we are in touch with that suchness. For that, we need to simplify our lives. We need to simplify what we do. So we try to pull back from sensory activity. We try to make our sensory activity less dramatic. We lower the threshold. By lowering the threshold, the speed of our mind slows down. If the speed slows down, we can get a more clear look at what's happening. So, one of the aspects of meditation retreats is slowing down. Usually we run. Quite literally, you know, we walk fast. If you look at people, how they stand, you notice that they stand on the front part of their feet. Now, if you stand on the front part of your foot, you actually have to walk, otherwise you fall on your nose. Yeah? We keep leaning forward. So that is where most of us are living. Most of us are trying to catch up with us while we are in various stages of falling. Yeah? How many of you always have the feeling that the days are not long enough? How many of you have the feeling that you don't do enough, that you should be more effective, more focused, more powerful? Yeah. So, meditation retreats are about the opposite. You don't need to achieve anything here. When you do walking meditation, you go nowhere. Yeah. I guarantee you. Yeah. Walking meditation leads you absolutely nowhere. Yeah. purpose of walking meditation is not getting anywhere. It's nowhere as obvious as in walking meditation. So, in meditation retreat, we allow things to catch up with us. We allow things to follow, that have followed us, to actually catch up. We say, we're here, we're no longer running away. I want to know what actually pushes. I want to know what I am propelled by. That is what we do. Now obviously we can't write that in our brochures, yeah? Because people, they don't want this. People want happiness, want awakening, want great power of mind, and they want bliss. So that's what we write in our brochures, that's why you're here. But what we actually do is something slightly different, yeah? We're not just wanting the happiness and the quiet of mind, we also want to deepen our understanding of what's happening. You see, because what you get in your meditation is not the result of your meditation technique. That is a little bit the result, but what you get in your meditation is what you live. Yeah? So meditation and life, the more you meditate, start to resemble each other. The things that happen in your meditation have definitely something to do with your life, not just with your meditation technique, not just with indoor or with vipassana practice or something. So be prepared that some of your life is with you. Yeah? That the things that are important in your lives will show up. Now, what we like to do is not to think about these things. We don't just want to think about these things, we want to make the mind more quiet so that we have a better look, we have a deeper, a more profound understanding of what's happening in the mind. To begin with, we establish a posture. We establish something that you feel at ease with sitting for, you know, however long we sit. Generally I'll be sitting 3/4 of an hour. If that is too long for you, if you are experiencing pain, then see whether you can negotiate with that pain. See whether it is possible that you try not to fight with the pain. There's different types of pain. You know? The Buddha says physical pain is inevitable. All of us will experience some degree of physical pain. But then there's something else that the Buddha calls suffering, which means when we have physical pain, we can be very, very angry with that pain.
You are cut off all the time.
The speaker is so good. I better speak without speakers.
It is good for you, but it's not good for the people in the bank. Abigail, maybe you... I can try without.
Yeah, it's just on the head, I think, because of the breath.
But I don't think that's the system, but we can try. Yeah. So if you have pain, try to check your attitude in respect to that pain. If that pain is strong, you will be tempted to hate it. You will be tempted to push it away. You will be tempted to go into a fight with it. The two types of pain I'm speaking of, the first one you cannot really avoid. The second one is the result of your fight. It's the result of your aversion. It's the result of your attacking the pain. So if you can do that, try to be less aversive to pain. Try not to push it away. I know it sounds paradoxical and counterintuitive, but try to offer that pain coexistence. One of the ways of making things very, very painful is fighting against it. It's adding to an existing pain, our aversion, our aggression, our willingness to go to war against this, which is painful. It is very obvious in the body. A pain that you don't fight against is still a pain, but it may become easier, it may be a lot bearable than a pain you hate. Yeah. Once you start hating your pain, you will start inevitably hating part of your experience. And it's very, very unpleasant to hate part of your life. Yeah. So think of a pain as something that is that can be comforted. You know, like you would treat somebody who is in pain, like you would treat somebody, a friend, a child who is in pain. Treat your pain in that way. Speak to it gently. Don't try to push it out. And if you do that, you will notice that pain is probably more bearable than if you attack it. Another thing you will find is that the mind keeps talking. Imagine that this mind has been trained to think. So don't object to the fact that it continues thinking. Just because you decide that you want to meditate now, it doesn't stop talking. It will comment, it will chatter, it will think of things past, of things future. So you have to be both patient with it and you have to be clear. You don't want to feed this talking activity in your head. That is one of the major reasons why the mind doesn't go still. We all know that. So try out whether it is possible that you can let those thoughts fade into the background. Imagine you would sit at a table, you would speak with a friend, and there are other people at a table next to yours, and they speak with very loud voices, but you want to listen to your friend. So what you do is you turn your attention to your friend and you stay with what your friend says. Even though the voices of the other people are loud, you have chosen to direct your attention to your friend. In doing so, the voices don't necessarily stop, but you don't give them meaning. Yeah? You don't follow their train of thought. You don't follow their reasoning. You stay with your friend. Now your friend is your posture and is your breath. Whenever you notice that your mind has gone to those people at the other table, bring it back to your friend. Bring it back to posture, bring it back to the breath. This is what you like to do. And however many times you need to do that, you do it. And you don't grumble with yourself if it happens. You don't judge yourself, particularly not in the direction that you say, it's not working, or it's not for me, or I'm a failure. Buddhist meditation is for other people, but not for me. This sort of thing is not very useful. If your mind wanders away 100 times, you bring it back 101 times. Yeah? You bring it back one more time, then it runs away. It's that simple. This is the deal. You're allowed to do that. You don't need to be perfect. Yeah? In meditation, we strengthen many, many wholesome attitudes. Obviously, one of them is we're trying to gain continuity of awareness. Another one is patience. Yeah. Again, it's something we can't write in our brochures because patience is not a very famous quality. But patience is something very, very precious. So by bringing it back, we strengthen the mind's ability to stay with something. We are strengthening the intention that says this is important and that is not important. That discrimination is important. This is strengthened as well. We are patiently bearing up with a habit of the mind to go away, to think, to stray, to wander. And we strengthen the mind's awareness to actually what happens. Because you may feel it is a failure if the mind goes away, but that part of you that knows that the mind has gone away is already mindfulness. Yeah? So it's mindfulness that makes you aware of a lapse in mindfulness. At that moment you notice that you have gone away, the the health has already started kicking in. Yeah? It's already the part of it's already part of the cure that brings you to the understanding that your mind has strayed away. If you're really strayed away, the next thing you hear will be the bell. Yeah? So if we meditate, try to establish a very good posture. Take some time to make yourself comfortable, to check that you have a good cushion, that you sit properly, that your weight is equally distributed, that you're centered. And then those of you who have had some support with posture, remind yourself of the basic things. Support for your pelvis is crucial. Then you feel how the weight of the body is distributed to all of your lower body, to your legs. And then you'd like to establish a bodily sense of a midline, something that goes from your forehead through your face, your breastbone, yeah, your sternum, past your navel, past your pubic bone. Can you feel something like a midline in your body? Now, see whether you're trying to visualize that or whether you're actually feeling it. Visualizing is helpful, but what I'm really interested in is that you feel that middle. Something in you that tells you you are upright and you are centered. If you close your eyes, obviously the body does that with checking against gravity, doesn't it? It is gravity, the pull of gravity on us, which gives us a sense when we are aligned. That alignment is generally felt as the least amount of pull. Yeah. If we are properly aligned, gravity has the least amount of effect on us. So one of the ways we feel that we're not upright is the heaviness, or more precisely, the muscular effort it takes to sit. And you'll soon recognize that sitting upright is the most comfortable way of sitting any length of time, although it may be a little artificial at the beginning. You will soon recognize if you sit more than 15 minutes, sitting anything else than upright really becomes very, very arduous. It becomes very, very strenuous thing to do. So you sit and you start to feel what are the dominant sensations of the body. If I turn my attention to the body, what comes to meet me first? Which part of the body? Is it the legs? Is it my bum? Is it my shoulders, my neck? What is it? What comes to meet my attention first? Imagine your attention to be something like the host at a big party. The host stands at the door and invites people in. So, who are the first people to come and visit you? You go and ask the body, what is first talking? If you have a particular tension or a particular pain, generally it will be that. If you don't have a particular pain, often enough it is the weight of the body. It is where this body feels its own weightiness. So generally, somewhere in the lower part of the body, you feel the contact this body makes with the earth, with the cushion, with the mat, whatever your sitting construction may be like. Then you ask yourself, what is next? You notice if your intention goes to some place, your attention follows. If you intend to go into the lower back, your attention will follow that intention. So sometimes it helps to make an image. I think of my lower back. This is a thought. And then my attention goes to literally to my lower back. And then I start getting sensations. Now I put my attention on the sensations. When I go there, suddenly my lower back starts to feel something more. It seems that the lower back becomes bigger. I get more messages from the lower back. Maybe I get some tingling or some warmth. Or I become conscious how painful it really is. You know, before it was just numb and now it's really painful. Or how pleasant it feels. Body can feel pleasant, relaxed, open, nicely solid, all kinds of things. So notice the basic movement. Your intention goes to some place and then your attention follows. And once your attention, your awareness is at that place, suddenly you get sensations. Something starts to come alive there. That's true for all things in our life. That's the way intention and attention go hand in hand. When we start meditating, we put emphasis on a good posture because it's the good posture that will make your sitting easier in the long run. Even though the good posture takes some effort to find, maybe unusual, in the long run it pays off. So every time you sit down, before you do something specific in meditation exercise, you take refuge, you remind yourself that this human being here can be enlightened, that this human being here is intelligent enough to understand true principles. This human being here is not alone. It is with other human beings who aspire to freedom and happiness. And then, once you have taken refuges, you go to the body. You ask the body how it feels. You check in. Now bodies feel different before the meal and after the meal, early morning, late evening, they feel quite different. You learn to befriend your body how it is right now. And you can do this in different ways. My suggestion for you is check the parts that are of key importance to your posture. Your small of your back and your pelvis. That is something you want to spend a moment of attention. Feel how it feels there. Feel whether you can relax something. Feel whether you can create an uprightness in these places. The second good region is the place where the weight of the body goes. Can you feel that? Is it the same in the left buttock and in the right buttock? Is the left leg carrying the same amount of weight as the right leg? If not, see whether you can adjust. Sometimes you can't because of your posture. The next point of interest is the upper part of your chest. Is this open? Can you open this up? Yeah, the parts of your bronchia and you make sure that this is open, it's not collapsed, it's not sagging. Breathe into the whole of your chest, the whole of your upper belly, and the whole of your lower belly. Fill the whole body with breath. Now for a couple of breaths, quite artificially deep breathing, chest, and then the lower part, and then the belly. Really feel yourself. And you feel how that chest part opens and widens. Feel that there is little spaces between your ribs. And every breath you take, these little spaces open a little bit, close a little bit. How much of that can you feel? With such in-breaths, you can give the body strength, you can vitalize it, you can help your posture with that breath. Another good point to keep an eye on is the area of your neck. Yeah. You can move your chin like you see I'm doing. And with that movement of the chin, something dramatic happens in your cervical vertebrae, the cervical spine. The posture or the position, much more of the chin, decides where the head is, really. So find with movements of the chin a position where that head rests in the fulcrum, rests in a way that it has the least amount of weight. Again, be conscious that what you usually do will feel normal. Now if it isn't perfect what you usually do, you don't risk anything by trying to experiment a little bit whether you find a place that is more comfortable or that is more aligned. Sometimes it helps if you imagine that you're being suspended from the top. So those of you who have more locks, more curls than I have, imagine you have a pull going slightly upward from the curl that is at the top of your skull. So rather than sitting here, you imagine being suspended like a puppet. And you have a slight pull upwards. And then you relax into this. You relax into the neck, relax in the part in your chest, relax into the lower back, the lumbar part of your vertebrae. And you rest in this. Rest at ease in this posture. And then you turn to the breath. You feel the breath coming and going. Now there's different areas where we feel the breath. One of those areas is the nostrils, another one is probably what's happening in the chest. Another of those areas, for many people the most strongly experienced one, is in the belly. It's the movement of the diaphragm up and down. And a feeling, for some people it's more up-down, for some people it's more in-out. Find out what it is for you, that you feel the lowest part of the breathing movement in your body. Feel the sensations at that place. Feel the beginning of the sensations, feel how they change, how they go past the climax, the highest culmination of intensity, and after that they will start getting softer and softer. disappear and fade away. And at the end, there is a little pause. And then there is a new in-breath. And what I'd like you to do now is to place your attention to that lowest part of your breathing pattern. So rather than sending your attention with the breath together in and out of the body, I would like you to establish your attention and awareness at the lowest part in your belly, where you can feel the breath. And there you stay. You stay with the flow of sensations of breathing. Let's do that for a while. Little proviso, if you find that your mind wanders away from there, just bring it back, gently, precisely, with no comments about your person. And I'd like you to do what we do now with great kindness. Be careful that you don't shout at yourself, or that you don't grit your teeth or make snarling noises or something. What you would like to do is to grant a smiling, a welcoming kind of awareness for how it feels when the breath comes and you follow the gentle sensations in your belly, how they come, increase, how they gradually ebb away, and how they disappear. Can you stay present with your awareness for this flow of sensations? That's what we do for the next quarter of an hour.